is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. I recently spent just over an hour in conversation with Native American conductor Timothy Long, which was one of the most fascinating interviews that I have had to date on Center Stage. Originally from East Oklahoma and a member of the Muscogee Creek Tribal Nation, he found classical music at a young age. With the nurturing of his family, who enabled him to stay with his truth as a proud individual, he has risen up the ladder in the music business to conduct with some of the great opera houses around the world. Last week, in part one of this interview, we spoke about the pivotal moments in his young years, but we also spoke of his synesthesia and the ability to feel music on many vibrational levels. Now, as artistic director and head of opera at the Eastman School of Music, he has distinguished himself in bringing significant operatic productions to their stages. In April, he will be conducting at the Metropolitan Opera in the premiere of Antony and Cleopatra. He is establishing his legacy in the compilation of the North American Indigenous Songbook and his work as president of the Plimpton Foundation, offering scholarships and commissions to First Nation and Native American performing artists. Timothy Long speaks for centuries of Indigenous people in his treasury of their music and stories. His passion for music exemplifies his personal passion for life. Here in part two, he speaks about the word for music in his tribal lore.
We do have a word for music, haichka.
Haichka.
Yeah, that is literally music. And strangely, of course, these words came later.
Okay.
Sitting next to my Hamburg Steinway here at Eastman, and a piano is called haichka flokko. Flokko means a big, so it really means big music.
Yeah.
Is the word for piano.
Oh, I love that.
So we did have that, but you know, all the tribes in America have had such different histories.
Yes.
A lot of Americans who don't know a Native person thinks of us as a monolith. We are one thing, maybe one language. We are 574 tribes in the United States alone.
Wow.
Which were more abundant before, but my tribes are originally from Alabama, Georgia, Northern Florida, and we were on the Trail of Tears. So we encountered colonizers as late as the late 1400s, or no, the late 1500s. The late 1400s was when that papal bull came out, the Doctrine of Discovery from the Catholic Church, that gave permission for white Christian men to dominate non-Christian brown men throughout the world. Just a little ditty there, Pamela.
Just a little ditty.
So we ended up in Oklahoma in the 1830s, which was when the Trail of Tears happened. And you can imagine how things were for us, because Andrew Jackson also tried to decimate us from this planet. That was the goal, to get rid of us. And he's on the $20 bill now.
Yeah.
Always celebrated.
Great.
Music was a little bit different in that respect. I think at that point, the missionaries came in and converted a lot of natives to Christianity. Luckily for us, it was more mild. It wasn't so harmful like some of the Catholic missions did, but it was an Indian Methodist conference, and that was very, very mild and very friendly. And so I've had a very kind of lucky time in my lineage that there wasn't too much, relatively too much trauma done to
right.
them.
Right. Thank God.
Yes.
Thank God. But it does exist. And this is what has been chronicled in this great work, the operatic work, Missing.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That changed me entirely. That was written in 2016. It was started by Pacific Opera Victoria, which is on Vancouver Island, a wonderful company, friendly company. And they did this in conjunction with City Opera Vancouver. And it is an opera, as you said, about the 5,000 missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada. And this opera was written by a brilliant, I think she's a genius. She's Dene Métis, Marie Clements, a filmmaker, an author, a playwright, a producer, a director. She's tremendous. She lives on Galliano Island, and just the way she speaks with for the native voices is so moving. And so she wrote the libretto, and then a Caucasian composer from Toronto, Brian Current, wrote the music, and they worked closely together. He worked so closely with Gitxaan people, getting to know the language and the meter, because I would say about 10 to 15% of is in the Gitxaan language.
Okay.
But I conducted the world premiere. I conducted the premiere in Victoria as well. I did a tour, a short Canadian tour, and I did the American premiere. Everywhere we did this, we would do private performances for victims' families. And, up until this point, my life as a native person was very separate from my professional life, completely separate.
Okay.
And once we started having performances for victims' families who had never been to opera, you would hear sobbing in the first minute that would not stop until the opera was well over. And then we would have conversations with them. And these people who looked like me, who acted like me, who looked like and acted like my family, were so disenfranchised. No one had ever spoken up for them. The Canadian government had done very little to help them. And at that moment, I realized how extremely fortunate I was. Because as I said to you, I still had the mindset of being a boy in Oklahoma and thinking that no one would ever remember me. But then when I saw that juxtaposed with what they were going through, I realized that with whatever position I had, I needed to stand for them in this world. And I've done that, and that changed me quite a bit.
Oh my. Oh my. What a privilege for you,
Yes, a
actually.
great privilege.
And of course, how do you feel now that so much information is being covered about this time in literature, in film, in shows and TV like Dark Winds? I mean, we're actually gaining a whole new entry into your world.
It's been slow. I mean, think about
Oh,
it.
yeah. Yeah,
Been
it has.
since the 17 and 1800s that we've been leading to this. And I'm incredibly proud. If you've watched Reservation Dogs, Sirhan Harjo, the creator, is from my hometown. He's the
Okay.
same tribe that I am, same hometown. Joy Harjo's in my tribe. And watching Reservation Dogs, there was one episode where, because it's set in Oklahoma, it represents my tribe, and they told a joke in the Muscogee Creek language, and they didn't explain it or translate it for about 10 minutes, and I couldn't believe it. A national television show telling a joke in Muscogee Creek for Muscogee Creek people. I wept because my dad would have been so crazy proud of him. My dad knew him and gave him some film and footage for one of his films. And oh my God,
Wow.
what a proud moment that was. So I love seeing it all. It's still slow going. A lot of people are taking notes now, but I try to be philosophical about all of this, not angry in any way, because things have happened. You can't go back and change history.
Right.
But the reason it's taken so long is that it's a sort of an ethical issue. If you were to truly look at us, you would have to look at your own history and what your ancestors stood for, what your government stood for, what your church stood for. And that is a really big issue to ask a human being to reconsider what they are and what they stand for. That's why in 2020, we still had a sports team in our nation's capital called the Redskins.
That's
And I
right.
always ask people, would you be comfortable with the Buffalo Blackskins in 2020, the Chattanooga Chinese? And these are underrepresented groups, mind you, brown groups. That's the difference, brown. And no, people would be horrified, but people in this country were so desensitized that the Redskins was okay. And it still is to a lot of people. So we keep moving that line forward, as slowly or as quickly as we can. But I always say when the door is open, that's when you push.
That's very good. Well, you're at that point, aren't you?
Well, I'm at a place where people listen. I never ever dreamed I would have anything that I have in my life. If you had told me about everything that I'm doing in 2025 as a teenager or even in my 20s, I wouldn't have believed you at all. But I do realize, as I do my work on seeing who I am and where I fit, I do realize I have a voice. And my goal is for people to always to think about Native Americans when they're around me. I don't want them to see me as an exception to the rule, which I know many did for years, but as a representative of the millions of people who are, don't have voices in this country and in this continent.
Correct, correct. I understand. And one of those voices you have right now is this great Native American songbook, which is very exciting. Can you tell us about the genesis of that, Timothy?
Absolutely. It's actually called the North American Indigenous Songbook because we wanted to include Canada and Mexico eventually because we all have different terms. We say Native American or American Indian still in United States. In Canada, it's First Nations, Inuit, and Métis. They don't use Indian. It's a more offensive to use Indian up there. Mexico, they have completely different terms, and that's thus the name of the songbook, the North American Indigenous Songbook. And I've said I married a wonderful white man, and we got together in 2003. So white that he's from Connecticut, he's fantastic. He's brilliant. He got his undergrad at Yale, his master's at Harvard, and then his doctorate at Juilliard. Speaks multiple languages, and has
And
just.
he's a singer.
He's a singer, yes, and a polyglot and a very direct, honest person. And he's been wonderful to me. And he has some wonderful families too. And his father is a wonderful guy who's become a really close friend of mine, Randy Plimpton. And Randy and I spend a lot of time together because our sweet doggy Pumpkin passed away last April. But up until then, Randy was her daily nanny for about 2 years here in Rochester. And Randy and I would just sit around and talk. And one night we were talking, we were literally just having scotch late night and talking about all these kind of ideas, just, randomly talking, not even seriously, not even focused. And after 2020, when Black Lives Matter happened, the lights came on and everybody panicked out of guilt. And which, guilt is good sometimes, sometimes is not good. But in that case, people began reaching out to me because they didn't know any other natives in classical music and asking, are there songs that we can sing? And there really weren't. So I said to Randy, it'd be great if we could commission something because he was always supportive and he always said, if there's anything you want to do, I can see if I can help. And so we had this idea of commissioning a songbook that could be done without fear of appropriation, because that's a big deal when you write something by natives. There's this thing in America where, we're either ignored or we're revered, and that's a sort of romantic thing that it alleviates guilt. It does all these things, but it also puts us, people think, my parents must be a shaman or something, And I would say we're very wise, but when you do that, it prevents you from seeing the human being.
That's right.
And so there's a lot of fear of appropriation with Native Americans. And
Okay.
so that was the goal. And that is in our contracts with the composers that these compositions must be doable by anyone. Even when they're in a native language. So we have language guides when they are in a native language. And we've had some really great composers sign on.
Wow, fantastic. And so this idea just came upon you, and you push the door.
Well, it all connects to how I grew up again. I didn't grow up with structure. I grew up with a deep, deep love of music. And a deep love of emotion that's connected to music. So that always guides me. But so when I come up with ideas, it's never through a structural process. It's usually I'm sitting around thinking about what I love. And then these things come to me. So yeah, I came up with it that night and we developed it. Then we decided, because my father-in-law is wonderful, and he started a scholarship in Oklahoma in my name. It's called the Timothy Long Prize, and it goes to Cherokee voice students of my friend Barbara McAllister, a retired Cherokee opera singer. The Cherokee Nation pays her to teach their citizens for free, and she's had some talented people. One of our recipients is in her second year at Juilliard right now in the voice program.
How
A new
exciting.
Cherokee, a singer named Caitlin Morton, very talented. So we decided then to start a foundation, the Plimpton Foundation,
Love it.
named after him, because he started it. And it provides scholarships now to Native American singers. And we also do commissions. We'll do grants for certain projects, but our project is the North American Indigenous Songbook. We had a hugely successful debut last November at National Sawdust. They said the biggest audience they've seen in years. It got a lot of attention. Oh my God, it was such a great night, and we're working on our second commissions now. But it's been so successful that people have been reaching out to us to turn it into a concert. So we're in discussions with a couple of management groups right now about turning it into a concert and seeing how we can take this out into the country and Europe.
Very exciting, Tim.
It is.
Wow. Look what you can do when a village comes together to build something.
Exactly. Yes. And it's you learn from everything that you do. Every project that I started, the first time I conducted, I was scared. The first time I played a concerto, I was scared. The first time I started speaking out, I was scared. The first time I said to people, I have an idea, will you support it? I was scared. But everything that you do strengthens you. And
That's
I
right.
think when people see that strength, they want to join in, especially
That's
if you're
right.
speaking from a place of truth and honesty.
I think you're just saying it exactly as it is in life. In fact, I think you should just go take over as a motivational speaker now and just get it out there.
How much does it pay?
A lot.
Really? Okay. I'll
And
consider.
we need truth and honesty right now, and
I
leading with the heart
agree.
and
People don't speak out. And you're right. And with the current climate, it's about when is that pivotal point that people are ready to hear your truth and honesty?
exactly. No, that's why we have to keep saying it.
Yes. And
It
we
can't
can't,
falter.
I keep saying that we cannot get down. We cannot let any of what's happening crush us, dent us, none of that. You stand strong until that point comes in time that, like I said, when that door opens a little bit, that's when you push. And it's going to be the same thing with what we're going through today.
I agree. I totally agree. We're going to have to be strong. I think we
Yes.
need you as our leader too.
Oh, you're sweet.
There is no question. So you are conducting actively. You've got a couple of projects coming up, which are very exciting. One, which is you'll be assistant conducting John Adams on the Antony and Cleopatra at the
Yes.
Metropolitan Opera.
Yes.
Looking forward to
I'm
that.
so excited about that. I've been at the Met since 2023, and they've been so nice to me. I don't think a company has ever been nicer to me than the Metropolitan Opera.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's such a famous company that you would never guess that somebody would say that, but every department's been wonderful there. And I got to work with Yannick Nézet-Séguin, who I just adore.
Energy
And
plus,
what a wonderful musician, he exudes joy everywhere he goes. But this project is, I'm the cover conductor for Antony and Cleopatra. It's a Met debut. And John Adams is conducting it. And I tell you, I've worked with so many famous and living composers, and I've never even met John Adams.
Oh my
And
gosh.
I love his music. I
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah, me too.
oh my gosh, I'm crazy about his music. So I'm excited about this. He'll be there only for the first 2 days, and then I take over for the next week and a half, and then he leaves another week later in the process. So I'm going to be doing quite a bit of conducting for this. And the
Thrilling.
director's an old friend of mine, Elkanah Pulitzer. Elkanah and I were on an early gig together in, I think, the year 2000. And then Julia Bullock starring in it, who went
That's
to
right.
Houston, and I know her from here. And then I know a lot of other people in the cast and the cover, so I think it's going to be a wonderful room. And we start April 3rd, and I can't wait.
Very exciting. And then after that, in July, I believe you are doing Missing once again.
We're doing Missing in Toronto, and It's a part of our CD release. We did a studio recording, and it's being released on the label Bright Shiny Things early this summer.
Love
And
it.
look for it. I mean, we had a tremendous group in Toronto, an instrumental group called Continuum. And then we had our singers who had been in the production before. So it's going to be a knockout recording. So we're looking forward to that release. And then the Toronto performance goes along with that. And it's going to be very exciting.
And that's a recording that needs to happen. The
Yeah, so look
legacy
for it on
again.
Bright Shiny Things. Yeah.
Bright, shiny things. I adore it. I adore it. Well, this has been an incredible hour so far, and some. And I think you and I could go on for like another hour
I think
easily.
so, yes.
We are kin. We're synesthetes and we are kin.
I'm so glad you get it. I can tell you get it. I can tell.
Oh my gosh, and when you start talking about that real understanding of synesthesia, how it is in you so deep, the vibrational quality of it.
Yes, it's living at all times.
Do you know, I didn't understand when I was a child when I would look at days of the week and underst I would see colors for them, but I would also feel a certain likeness or a dislike or a certain vibrational, you know, yes or no. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I thought it was just something I made up in my mind, I'm telling you,
That's it. It is feeling. That's the thing. It is feeling. It is emotion. And again, I wondered, because I think I was addicted to that emotion. And then I'm wondering, is that dopamine? Have I had a lifelong dopamine addiction through synesthesia?
but hey, it got you through this career. I mean, this is great.
Worked.
And an understanding of yourself. My gosh. Well, look, for a better understanding of you, I have two big questions for you, and these are my signature questions.
Okay.
The first is, if you had an opportunity to have dinner with anyone who has passed from this earth, anyone, who would it be?
It
Just one evening.
would be a lady we called Aunt Sis. And she was my father's sister. So, like him, she grew up with the Muscogee Creek language, learned English second. They're from a town called Yeager, which is outside of where I grew up in Oklahoma. And she died at age 50. They misdiagnosed her cancer. She died in 1982. And she was the most elegant, beautiful lady. We just looked up to her. I remember watching her put on her lipstick, and she was tall and slender, and she smoked, which I thought looked so cool. She would go to Santa Fe to hear opera. She would go to the Met on tour to hear opera. And she heard me, like I got to my piano teacher, my second one, at age 12. So she had heard me after I was really advancing in my abilities. And she was extremely proud. And she died before I really started accomplishing things. And one of the
Right.
last things she said, I was told, was that she regretted that she would never be able to see me play in a large concert hall. It was only 2 months after she died that I won a statewide competition that really changed things for me and pushed me on a faster track. And
Yeah.
I would just absolutely love to share my life with her because she is a part of it to this day. I still have Ed Eastman on my desk, a little volcano rock that she gave me for a gift
Oh
when I
my
was about
gosh.
12 or so.
Oh
I have
my
a
gosh.
photo up in my house. And you would think that somebody dies in 1982 when you're 14, that they would just disappear, but she's
No.
still a daily part of my thoughts and
What
life.
an influence on your life. What a huge evening you would have together talking
Oh,
about everything you've accomplished.
it'd be amazing.
Oh my gosh, that's so wonderful. I love that, Tim. And also, is there one word or phrase? I'm just throwing this at you, I'm sorry, with no kind of warning. Is there one word or phrase that really describes who you are to your heart, to the depth of your soul? What comes to your mind first?
Conduit.
I love it.
I'm a conduit for centuries of understanding and emotion because I'm devoted to scores. I don't really look at music as and this is hard to describe and it's hard to teach as well because I don't know that the words really do this well. I'm so devoted to my scores and understanding the micro and the macro scores so that I can be a conduit for what that composer was wishing. Because every composer has a different language. And so many people treat them as if they're the same language, but we have to dig. And by the
That's right.
time we get to the place where I want to be, it's almost like I am just an open hallway for these composers to connect with. And as I tell my students, I look at scores as incantations of physics. When we take that score, if we deeply understand it, when we perform it, we are changing the vibrations into the room to the same vibrations that all humans have felt in the presence of this composition since its inception. So in a way, we're closing the gap of time, we're closing the gap of knowledge, and if we're really, really present, especially as a synesthete, but even not, we are changed. We are absolutely changed. And here's another thing. I've thought about synesthesia a lot, but what is the goal of music? Synesthesia. We're taking a visual document and then making it physical, which turns into something that is just vibrations in the air. So we are experiencing emotion, one emotion through a different one. And that's, we're, you and I are trying to help everybody to feel what we are as synesthetes.
Timothy Long, his life as a synesthete, his devotion to personal integrity, and his immense passion about music. He leads with the quiet knowing of who he is as a proud Native American. His legacy will last forever as he helps other Indigenous performing artists as they strive to be heard with their music and art. And of course, in his own career as a world-class operatic and orchestral conductor. I hope all my listeners will take the time to find out more about this incredible artist at timothylongmusic.com and at the plimptonfoundation.org. And you simply must see the filmed version of this interview, unedited and complete, at Center Stage with PamelaKuhn.com. There was a lot of magic being made in this interview. So until we meet again, stay safe out there, everyone. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.